Welcome back to the campsite, everybody. This is John, and I'm here with my co-hosts Tim, Jack, and we got Juan on the runs and twos again.
Juan on the ones and twos.
Yeah, and why are you leading this episode, John?
I am leading this episode because we have another special guest today.
Yay! Woo!
This time I have my wife here, Courtney. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Courtney.
Woo! So today the reason we brought Courtney in today is because we wanted to do an episode in a field that Courtney works in, and this is going to be about people who have mental health issues and developmental disabilities and likewise, and how they are adversely affected under capitalism. So this is a field that Courtney works in, so I'll let her kind of discuss what she does.
So I basically work in a private nonprofit company, which obviously I will not disclose.
Sure.
But I work with people who are special needs and they live by themselves in the community, or some might live with their parents. I have some staff who would see them maybe like once or twice a week just to help out with like little things like transportation for grocery shopping or transportation to the doctors to go get out and do some fun stuff. And then in a previous field that I was in, I worked and I kind of had to hunt down some homeless people to help them get their meds, help them see psychiatrists and get taken care of. Or sometimes I ended up having to help escort them to places like Summit Mental Health. So I've been around the field a little bit.
Sure, sure. I guess my first question would be for Courtney is, in your experience working with both, you know, people who have had, you know, in many cases, very severe mental disabilities, intellectual disabilities, mental health issues, what is something or if there are a few things that like we would never think like, oh, that is something that those people would struggle with and that is a need that they have. Like, it's something that we just take for... I mean, I'm sure there are so many things that are just, like, we take for granted on a day-to-day basis. But is there anything in particular that, you like, struck you that, like, you never thought about before you were in that field? You're like, oh, that's a need that's not being met.
Well, there are a lot of people that just assume because people are disabled that they, like, can't do things. Or, my brother is also special needs. So, like, we'll run into people... in the store and he'll be stemming, which is basically they'd like flap their hands and sure. Just because to deal with the stimuli around him, like someone will stare or someone will like run into him and push past him because he's walking slow. And it's just the point where you're like, okay, like I didn't really notice this before because I don't really notice it unless I'm with him.
True.
But like people just like brush past him because they're just seen as like an inconvenience in society. And even things like, how can I put it? Like, we have individuals who hate, like, being stigmatized for their disability. Like,
yeah.
I work with some people who have Down syndrome, and they get really pissed off when you just kind of talk to them like a baby.
Sure.
And they're like, well, I'm an adult. I'm, like, 40-something years old. Why can't you just talk to me like you would your friend?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's just something that I was like, yeah. Now that I'm working with adults, like, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's, I never noticed that people do that until you work in this field.
Absolutely. So, really, it sounds like what it comes down to is these folks have the audacity, in the minds of others, they have the audacity to, like, exist in a public space. Like, how dare they, you know? And it's, like, they have the audacity to, like, want to be treated like human beings with dignity. And that the fact that that is something that we are, you know, even, like, I think... well-meaning but condescending people can sometimes I think that that's really interesting that was like the first place you went with it is like, well, they just want to be treated like everyone else, and like for some reason we have this whole societal stigma around them where we don't. And I think that that's, yeah, it's really unfortunate. And you know,
it's even worse with like parents too, because parents feel like they're protecting them in a way, or they'll say like, I have to go to various meetings with parents and the adults because they may be their guardian or their advocate, if you will. And we have parents that will talk over their kid.
Sure.
And I'm like, well, I'm not asking your opinion. I'm asking their opinion because it's their life, not yours.
Sure.
So it's just a lot of people think they're doing good things, but they're not.
Right. And I'd imagine that gets doubly frustrating. I'm sure you get that with people who have, like, their adult children that they still talk over like that.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
That's awful.
We even had like a situation when I first started working in the field where I'm at now, where it was a situation where I ended up having to call the police because it was a situation where an individual was touched inappropriately by a typical person. And the person was like, please don't tell my mom. And I was like, well, you're an adult. Like, I don't have to tell your parent because they're not your guardian. And so when the parent found out, because the individual wanted to tell their parents themselves, the parent called me and screamed at me and was like, well, do you have kids? And I was like, I don't, but it doesn't make a difference. They're an adult.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't have to tell you if you were my kid anyway. Like,
right.
They don't want you to know, so it's none of my business to tell you.
Right.
Just
yeah,
because
I still have
special
to,
needs.
Right. I still have to respect certain rights they have as individuals, even if they're a disabled individual. So.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know. That was my first lead. Do you guys have questions or places you want
to
go with that?
Well, I kind of wanted to see what Jack wanted to ask because he works in a. I'm sorry. We wanted to. You work in a similar field in social work, so I'm sure you run into a lot of similar things.
Yeah, and like working. I work primarily in like addiction medicine. So it's a little different focus, but a lot of the same overlapping issues with mental health and homelessness and things like that. But I find that like a lot of the focus therapeutically tends to be on getting people employed, you know, and how do you push people to get jobs? How do you push people to, which is especially difficult if they have disability, because if you have disability from the government, then you can't work more than, you know, 15, 20 hours a week, or they take away your disability, and you can't get it back. So, like, is in developmental disability, is there that same push to try and, like pigeonhole people into being employable, quote-unquote?
Yeah, my brother, who's on the spectrum, the county says that he's not eligible for a waiver because they think he can work. But for any of you who have met my brother, he needs assistance with, like, personal hygiene. Like, we still have to help him wipe his behind.
Sure.
He can't safely know how to exit the room in a fire or an emergency. If there was a tornado, he wouldn't know what to do.
Right.
And so they say he doesn't qualify for a waiver for that on like a couple other things. And also just because like my mom is alive and can take care of him. So she can't qualify for that assistance for him. And so she's had to like jump through hurdles, like to try to say, to get his doctor to say like, he's not able to do these things. So I don't know why the county is trying to push for that. And even then, like, if with my work, like, we have individuals who could work, but they're like, I don't want to work. I get all my stuff here. Like, where I work, like, their Social Security pays for the food on the table, their clothes, their housing, and then they get, like, $20 a week. They're good. They don't want to work. And then I have, like, an individual who lives by themselves, and their parent is trying to push them to work 40 hours a week, and that just makes that person very upset because they feel like they're doing their best. And then I had to try to say like, well, if she works more than you're telling her to do, then she can lose all her benefits. And they're like, well, she'd get benefits with insurance and she'd get this. And I'm like, well, that maybe that's so, but then she would never get that back. And she's going to stress out and relapse with, she has really like bad depression. So she could go back into that if you push her to do things she's not comfortable with, just because you want her to be out of the system and be quote-unquote typical.
It seems like there really, really is no, and I know, like, I obviously know why, and I think all of our listeners know why, there is no in-between with, like, workability and disability and, like, ability to work within disability. It's like either you have to be so severely disabled by some arbitrary standard the state gets to qualify for this pittance of money, or and all your circumstances, like you said, you have to, you know, maybe have parents who are deceased, they can, or you have to work and you have to deal with whatever those benefits are, even if it's shitty, you know, minimum wage benefits or no insurance or whatever. And it's like, logically, there would be a vast in-between where it's like, okay, this person maybe could work 10 hours a week and feel like they are, you know, do something where they get out of the house and they feel like they're contributing, they have more money to spend, whatever, and maybe that benefits them, maybe they like that. But, like, no, that person can't be working 40 hours a week. They don't, for whatever reason, they're not physically or mentally able to do that. And do you think that would be a good first step? Or, like, in your mind, what is the kind of the initial first steps here as far as like things that need to change fundamentally with the system. And I mean, yeah, I know not there's a million facets to the system and that's a huge question, but like what do you see on a daily basis that you're like, that's what needs to change first to like stop the kind of hemorrhaging that is like this issue?
Well, the example I think of is like there are people who are more typical than my brother, like who have waivers in this, like they could technically not have waivers, but because they had one before the deadline of the waiting list period now, like they're saying that he doesn't qualify because of all these certain things. So I think that this waiting list thing is stupid and they should reevaluate, like, okay, well, you've had the thing for this long and you have parents that could also support you, so this waiver should go to someone else. But, or I have, like, I actually have, like, a parent, like, set that is, like, mismanaging, like, Social Security money, and I've, like, brought it up before. So it's just, like, we have these people who are, like, abusing the system, getting multiple things, and then there's people that actually need the help.
Sure.
So there definitely needs to be, like, a way to go back and reevaluate these waivers, and make sure that everybody gets what they need.
Right. It needs to be much more needs-based and much more... There needs to be a lot more oversight, which there never is because of underfunding and other things, I'm sure, so...
Well, even then, like, my mom can't even get food stamps from my brother because the food stamps are based on, like, the family. It's not...
Yeah.
It's not for, like, an individual. Like, technically, he makes whatever his Social Security is, and that's it a month, and that would never be enough to put food on the table,
no.
Like, clothes on someone's back.
Never.
Even then, like, for a field at Jackson, that's not enough. If someone doesn't have a job, that was never enough for when I worked with people with mental health in the streets either, because half the time they would go spend it on other things because they're really sick, or they just got evicted because they never paid their rent.
Sure.
So it just, I think the whole system needs to be reevaluated somehow. I just don't know how that is.
I was about to say, I've had actually surprisingly a handful of friends who kind of worked in similar fields. I've had friends who were like social workers, caseworkers. I had a friend who did work in mental health specifically with homeless populations and going in and trying to help them. And every single one of them always ended up saying the same exact thing after they quit 3 months into it, because they're like, I can't, and it's because of the system. It's not the job itself. They're like, I love doing what I do, and you try to do what you can, but the system yourself, like, just roadblocks you at every step of the way and stops you from doing any actual kind of real progress. What you have the ability to do, but there's just so many things in place that are like, nope, you can't do that. Same thing with, like, social workers. Like, the whole thing is always and above all family preservation.
Right.
So, I mean, you have these situations where these people very clearly should not have these children. These children should be taken away from these parents, but unless it's absolutely 100% without a shadow of a doubt, like, provable or plausible, they leave those kids there because family preservation comes before all.
Right.
So I think it's just all these systemic things that come down to good people trying to do good work and do good things, but a system that just roadblocks them every single step of the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it's so important to remember that that is by design. Under capitalism, I think that's something we discuss a lot on the show. And, you know, I'd love your all's, I mean, I would love any thoughts, you know, either Jack or Courtney or any of you have really is like, ways in which the system is very clearly designed to be complicated and to make things difficult, especially when you're dealing with people with like intellectual disabilities who maybe they don't have full reading comprehension. They don't have, like, do you guys see things on a daily basis, or I mean, Courtney, especially, like, where you're like, oh yeah, this is by design that this is screwing with people?
Well, not like where I am now, but when I used to work at a mental health agency, we had certain because it was a Medicaid facility, like, the nonprofit got paid by Medicaid, we can only bill, like, a certain amount of time for each individual, so I don't know how that works for you, but when I was working there, like, say, like, I have the four of you on my caseload for the day,
sure,
and then, like, John here went and got himself evicted, but Medicaid says that I can only bill an hour and a half per day per person, so I might go and spend, like, 3 hours with John and only get, like, credit for work for an hour and a half. And then that shows up, like, on my record that I'm not meeting my, like, quota of, like, billable Medicaid hours. So then I could basically, if I wanted to hit that quota, say, sorry, fuck you, John. Like, you got evicted. Been with you for an hour and a half. Can't do anything more with you. I got to move on and work with Tim.
Yeah.
So that I can keep my job and keep my billable time up to speed. And that's why I left my other job, because I was like, this is too much. Like, I'm trying to help, but you're not even allowing me to help.
Right.
By setting these limited parameters.
It's incredibly insidious the way that's designed.
Oh, like, yeah. And I think a big issue, too, is that, like most jobs where you are in a direct service industry, and that's why they call the people who are working with these individuals direct service professionals, they don't pay them enough. I mean, I experienced it, too. There was about a year period in, when I was in college when I also was working as one of these. I had an individual I worked with and then two more a little bit later on in the job before I quit. And they don't pay you enough. I mean, you can work, you know, 40-plus hours a week, and, you know, this is somebody's main job. I was just lucky enough that it was just kind of a side gig for me when I was in college, and I was still able to, you know, still work full-time with it. But I also ran into an issue too, and one of the main reasons I quit was because of a system in place. And I, you know, we talk about this and what Ron was bringing up, and there's issues with it where there are reasons that these systems are in place. And I'm going to preface it by saying that, but I had an issue where I took this individual to a bowling alley one night, and, about a month later, I get a call back from my director saying that somebody was reporting that I was manhandling him in the bowling alley, and then I left him in the car for 20 minutes, came in and had a drink, and then brought him back in later. No idea where these claims came from, but there was like a whole investigation that they had to go into it with me, and they found out, of course, that there was no wrongdoing on my part, but the fact that I was put through that, and, you know, it was just like, wow, this is really shitty. I had to go through that. I understand, you know, why these processes are in place, but at the same time, you know, there needs to be a little bit more care and support for the individuals who are working as well, not just the people that are being served, but the people that are serving.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. And like, you tend to think when you're going to like social service, or at least I did, when I was going to school to be a social worker, I was working in retail because it was like the only job that I could just get without any other qualifications. And in retail, there was always this big focus on your numbers, right? And every single day, your boss is talking to you about your numbers and how do you get your sales up and how do you get your credit applications up and how do you do all these things. And you're just constantly under that pressure related to this stupid spreadsheet of numbers, right? And you think that when you go and work for a nonprofit, that that's going to be different, right? Because you think, oh, well, duh, I'm working for this capitalist conglomerate that, you know, its main focus is to make profits for shareholders. So, of course, they're going to have that pressure. But then you go to the private or to the nonprofit sector, and you start getting hassled by your boss about how you don't have enough productive hours on the clock. And how you need to make sure that you're billing Medicaid and bringing in enough revenue for the nonprofit so that they can keep their funding, right? And initially, I'm like, oh, okay, like, I get it. This is how the organization is funded. You know, we need to make sure that we're bringing in enough revenue so that we can keep the shop open and keep helping these people. And then I went to my work throws like an annual like employee appreciation little dinner thing for us at Christmas time. And they have all the members of the board show up to it. And the members of the board that showed up to it were like the presidents of local banks and these two like tech bros wearing like, they looked like Mark Zuckerberg and like the dress down, but you could tell they were super rich. They had like $50,000 watches on and shit like that. And you go and you look up, and so that got me thinking. I went and I looked up their salaries, which are six-figure salaries. All these board members have six-figure salaries. And then I got it into my mind to go and look at my actual Medicaid billing strips, right? And I looked and I saw that my agency charges each of my clients $150 an hour for my time, and I get paid 20 of that.
Jesus.
And so you like when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, like that it's the same thing. Just because the company itself does not post a profit does not mean that it is not a pyramid system with like three or four white dudes up at the top.
Oh yeah.
Raking in 100%. The cash.
Yes.
100%. At the expense of everybody else.
Yep.
Absolutely. So I wanted to get into this here a little bit, and you know, John, if you want to lead off and have, you know, maybe Courtney tell the story. I was very interested in getting into the story about your friend and kind of getting that as like a segue into a very real issue that I think we need to talk about with disability, which is police brutality. So,
okay. Well, I'll let Courtney tell the majority of the story, but when I heard the story, I was just in my office one night, and she comes downstairs in hysterics, clearly very upset, and I'll let you take it from there, Courtney.
Well, thanks for letting everyone know that I'm hysterical, but whatever.
Yeah. Thanks for letting everybody know I'm a human and I have emotions. Anyway, please continue.
So I found, my mom just sent me like a Facebook like status update, and I guess a young man that my brother went to school with and they graduated last year. This young man, he got I think he had a scholarship to college, but I do know he goes to college. He's very articulate, very smart. Very high functioning. Thank you. I was stumbling over that word. And he was just walking down the street barefoot, stemming with like a hair pick. In his neighborhood or around the streets of his neighborhood, one or the other. And some concerned person called the cops. And because he did not answer the questions, because he was, as we most of us know, people with on the spectrum, they can be in their own little world and not understand questions that might not have like specific.
Or they're just scared and they don't want to respond.
Yeah, or that. So they ended up tasing him, for doing nothing more than walking down the street, with a hair pick and stemming and walking barefoot. So the mom posted a status about how, he wasn't doing anything wrong and how the cops tried to tell him he didn't do anything wrong. But of course then they had tased him like close to his heart and, they have heart problems in the family. So, how is this young man gonna ever understand, like, I didn't do anything wrong, and they told me I didn't do anything wrong, but they tased me, so now I think I did something wrong.
Right.
And then also, like, something worse could have happened with the heart problems in the family, and there definitely could have been a better way for them to handle that situation. And we've been saying, like, in our field, there needs to be way more training, with autism and other things like that. Because people, they just clearly thought he was a tweaker walking down the street when there's definite different signs between drug use and autism stemming.
Right.
So yeah, that was a little hard, especially because it could have been anybody. And then my brother, right, who's way less verbal than he is, it could have happened to him. So that was really rough.
Sure, sure. And I think that is a really important thing to note, is that across racial lines, all races, all, you know, classes, whatever, if you add, you know, disability to whatever somebody's identity is, the probability that they can be hurt or even killed by the police, it goes up significantly. Like, white people, black people, white people, it doesn't matter. It is definitely one of those things that, across the board, the statistics on police brutality always increase. And I think that it's important to remember that.
I think it reminded me a lot of the Elijah McClain death. He was in Colorado, and that, well, it was like 1 or 2 years ago now.
I don't even know if it was that long ago.
Yeah, so I'd be very similar situation where he's, you know, just, you know, kind of bopping down the street, walking to the gas station, getting a drink, and then he's coming home and he has headphones in, or, and then, you know, somebody just called the cops on him, and the cops rolled up and tackled him to the ground and killed him because he's being himself.
Yeah, he was just
fucking awful.
Yeah, just some guy walking down the street. And I think it's, you know, I don't even know if I really even have a question there. I appreciate you telling that story, because I think that it's important to remember that these are things that we deal with. So, I guess as a professional, I would also want to ask, like, what can people, if there are people out there listening who maybe have, you know, kids or siblings who are autistic or intellectually, you know, disabled in some way, and they have these concerns, what are things that they can do, if anything, in your mind, to not only ease their own minds, but to like help these folks deal with these situations with like the police or whoever they may have to interact with?
Like, if you were to like see someone on the street that,
yeah, or just
autism,
like, or no, that like if somebody's listening, if they have like, say, a kid who's intellectually disabled, is there anything that they can do in their own life to lessen the probability of there being an issue in that regard?
I mean, I think it's important that anybody who is on the spectrum or has special needs, like, carry a, like, a state ID.
Okay.
I mean, I think that, I mean, there was a time where we were going to Michigan with my younger brother, and John was speeding, and then we got pulled over, and my brother is kind of like in the back, like, what the hell is happening? And so, like, in my mind, like, I'm panicking because, like, if he like says something, or if Noah like starts like doing his like his stemming in the back, or he right. like yells or something. And he,
sometimes
he's, like,
he'll, you know, bob back and forth very quickly and kind of looks like thrashing, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or he gets excited because he wears headphones and listens to music. So I'm like sitting there like trying not to have a panic attack while the guy's asking John questions. And then so I tell my mom, you know what, he needs to bring his ID with whoever he goes with, because you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
Or like, I don't know, like people in general need to be a little more accepting. Like,
true.
Like there was, like this is probably a little off topic, but we were passing by, we picked my brother up from school one day, and we were passing by, and there was a kid with Down syndrome having like a complete temper tantrum, and he was almost going to go in the street, and there was a, like his grandma figure, like trying to calm him down. Mm-hmm. And I was like, mom, pull over. I can like try to help, because I don't want this kid to go in the street.
Right.
Clear meltdown. And so we just stopped, and I'm like, do you want some help? And she was like, no, but thank you. So it's just like, people just like stop and stare, or like look at you like you're not handling this child appropriately, like right. do something. But it's like, there just needs to be a little more humility. Like yeah. there are different people. Just like, even like raising your own kids, like teach people that people are different. Like, sure. I mean, my younger brother, like John and I are having a kid soon. Like he's so excited for secret baby. That's what he calls it, because we told him it was a secret. Did not tell people. So it's just like the, our kid is going to grow up understanding that his or her uncle is special needs, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It's, I just think there needs to be a lot of change with that. Respect. In general.
Mm-hmm.
Respect. I think that's a really, that's a good point. And I think that, you know, I think that really is the answer. You know, I asked, you know, well, what can people do to, you know, to help circumvent these issues? And the answer is be more empathetic and create a society where we're more empathetic to these issues. So,
or do your own research too. Yeah. Like it's not that hard.
Right.
Sure. I think that that's a good point. You know, especially in this day and age, there's gotta be countless resources out there you can look into that'll be like, if you were, you know, if you encounter somebody who, you know, is autistic and they're having a meltdown, here's what you can do or whatever, you yeah. know?
Yeah. Well, I think that like in general, bourgeois society creates this picture of the world that doesn't include anybody who falls outside of a very narrow definition of what is socially acceptable.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the nature of bourgeois society, right? And it's based around this mode of production where you have people who are competing for jobs.
Sure.
And they, the working class are forced to compete for the privilege to make money for the working class, or for the ruling class, right? And in a world where that is the case, you are going to have people who are not found to be employable for a wage, and those people are going to be pushed to the margins of society no matter what you do, because they are not going to be able to participate fully in civic life like people who are thought to be employable for a wage, because they have skills or abilities that can make money for other people.
True.
If you flip that on its head and you look at a communist society where instead of it's the individual's responsibility to gain employment, it is the government's responsibility to ensure that there is full employment for everybody.
Or some sort of basic universal income and healthcare. And I wanted
yeah,
to bring
up
both.
Way to do it. Yeah,
all of the above.
Yeah, like it's the government's job to figure out how to ensure that each person has a good quality of life, if that includes working and making a contribution to the society, or if they are one of the people that, you know what, this person exists, they can't really do a whole lot of useful work, we still have to support them anyway, guys. We all got to pull our resources together and be nice and support this person, which sounds super basic, but it's just totally absent in the way that we have organized our society.
And it's also not only like just the moral thing to do, it's the most logical and most productive thing for a society to do. Having mentally ill and disabled people out on the streets because they don't have anyone to take care of them is not good for anybody.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's going to cost our society a lot less to just give these folks somewhere to live and give them food than it is to deal with the medical issues of being out on the street, the cost of the excessive police forces that have to deal with this situation,
the brutal architecture being put in the place, like removing public benches from parks under overpasses. They're putting concrete and metal spikes down so people can't set up a camp or a sleeping bag. Like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Well, yeah. And there's another point. We talk about things that can help in kind of normalizing it. I think when there's the kind of tinfoil hat thing happened, vaccines cause autism, da 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 da, which obviously isn't true. And the real explanation, it's like, well, how come, you know, the numbers are rising as the vaccines increase? It's like, well, it's because we're learning more about autism itself, and we're finding out it's a pretty broad spectrum. It can go from, hey, you're just kind of a little awkward in social situations to, like, very severe cases and everything in between. We just did an episode of the Movie Podcast, and we talked all about Alfred Hitchcock, and I swear to God, the more that we talked about his personal life and put all these things together, it struck me right in the middle. I was like, Alfred Hitchcock was on the spectrum.
Oh,
he was absolutely almost 100% certainly. Sure. On the spectrum. So, like, realizing that there's things like that and going, Chris Rock, at, 45 fucking years old, just the other day got diagnosed with Asperger's.
No kidding.
Like, no, there's a whole huge news story about it. So the more...
comedians.
Yeah, so, I kind of say it jokingly, but I honestly do. I really don't think... I think there are a lot more of us in the entertainment and professional world who are somewhere on the spectrum, and we don't talk about it. And you don't, like, maybe go look into it and learn how to help with you more and those around you more. So I think the more we kind of have an open discussion and realization of, like, look, it's really not that big of a deal.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's only going to help.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. Sure. We're getting to about 30 here, so if we got, like, a couple more questions, if anybody's got anything else that they really urgently want to ask.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, too, is earlier when you guys were talking about the time that gets billed, and, you know, like, you know, you might have, like, so much billable time for one individual, and, you know, you got to use that and say, you know, unfortunately forgo spending time with somebody who may need a little bit more time just because of what you are able to work, you know, the amount of time you have to work somewhere else or work with them. If we were to treat the same issue like we would, like, with universal basic income, universal basic health care, universal human services, something like that, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about that kind of shit, because this is all something that just gets the funding it needs, rather than we got to fund it through nonprofit organizations and stuff like that, when it's like, why is this not being taken care of like every other public service?
Right. Well, that's a good question. Yeah. I don't know. What are your guys' takes on that? Because I kind of know what my take would be on that. But
I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. It's just kind of like, why shouldn't it?
Right. Yeah. No, because capitalism doesn't want it to be, I guess. That's really all it comes down to.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, if we're going to address the issue, I think that needs to be definitely part of the dialogue when we're having discussions about things like basic health care, you know, provided for by the government.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And it seems very funny to me that the government has billions of dollars to give to corporations, no strings attached, but... For a nonprofit to get Medicaid hours money from Medicaid to make sure people don't starve, you know, they got to jump through every hoop imaginable.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and they don't even take care of people's food needs. That's the thing. Most of the food needs for my clients, at least, are all taken care of through the food bank system, right? Mm-hmm. And the distribution network that basically is just going through a bunch of small churches and little tiny, you know, food pantry operations scattered throughout the city. It's a whole, you know, knowledge base to know where you can go to get free food, because the food benefits are just so entirely inadequate. And most of the time, the income that these folks have is, like, if you have standard SSI, I think for this year, you get like $778 a month. Mm-hmm. And then federal guidelines state that you have to pay 30% of that income for your housing. You have to pay another 10% for your utilities. And then you wind up with having to pay, you know, medication copays if you have medications and things like that, especially if you're on Medicare and not Medicaid. You know, a lot of these folks, their money is spent before it even really comes into their hands. They barely have enough to get by as it is.
That's a common conversation I have with a lot of people in my work, too. I work with a lot of people who are on fixed income, and they're trying to qualify for, you know, purchasing a home, and they're always concerned with, I only get this much money after all my deductions. And I said, oh, well, good news is we're not looking for how much you get after your deductions. We're just looking to count for your total income, you know, before anything gets taken out. So that's, you know, good news for you there. So it is good, and I really like that because I guess, unfortunately, a lot of other places are telling them, like, no, it has to be this much income after your deductions. It's like, well, that's fucking shitty because it's already being taken out for these other expenses
right.
that they have to use. So this is what they, you know, legitimately have to use for, so let's count it.
Sure. Courtney, do you have any closing thoughts at all? Do you have any, like, final pitch that you're like, this is what I think people really need to take away from this interview? Because, well, first of all, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really great to talk to you. It's been very eye-opening,
yeah,
so I appreciate it.
I mean, I don't really have any closing thoughts. It's just, it's nice to be able to, like, share a different view and just tell people to be kind and, like, accept other people. It's not really that hard to be a decent human being. Do some research if you have concerns about the way some kids act in public or adults act in public. Why someone like my brother walks around with a freaking hanger in a store, God knows, but it's just what makes him feel good, and all you have to do is be nice. I don't know.
Sure. Be nice. I think that's it, man.
Just be nice or walk away. There's the two options.
Absolutely.
Mind your business.
Well, and I think, like, if you talk about, like, being nice to people who have disabilities, like, I think one-on-one in an individual social context, I think most people are nice to a point, right?
You can be nice. You can be nice, and you can be rude at the same time. It's very condescending.
We have individuals who, like, we do this. The one reason I really like my company is we do, like, an individual, like, section, like, set of an interview. Whereas, like, if I'm interviewing for a staff, then I might bring John along so that I could see how he thinks that this staff person might work in their home.
Sure.
So we give them their own, like, set of interview questions, and we're like, okay, you ask these questions and I'll write down their answers for you.
Sure.
If you can't write. And then so we say, well, what'd you think? Did you like them? And they can be like, they were fake as hell. Like, I don't like them. Like, we've had people be like that legit, or they'll be just like, they were nice, I don't care.
Yeah.
But it's nice to actually, like, give their opinion and give them the power to, like, employ That's awesome. Their own staff.
Yeah, you should be able to do that. Like, you know, you should have some say in, like, I think this person's nice, I think this person's a jerk, and I want to, if they're going to be taking care of me day in and day out, I should have some say in who that is.
We've had one person, she punched someone because they hugged her, and I was like, well, why did you punch her? And she was like, because I told her no, and she hugged me anyway.
Oh,
and
well,
I was like, well, then she deserved to be punched.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to make you apologize.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, like, my boss was like, why didn't you tell her not to punch her? And I said, well, she said no, so why am I going to tell her not to punch her?
Yeah, again, respect my boundaries. Like, you have things you don't want me to do to you. Don't think just because I have some sort of, disability that you can just kind of violate my boundaries.
Yeah, and we've been having to teach this person about respect and boundaries anyway, so I was like, well, she did what she was taught to do, is respect boundaries, so someone else didn't respect her just because she's rich and makes money doesn't mean she can't get punched in the face for not listening.
True. So at the end of the day, I think the real takeaway here is be nice to disabled people because they're human, and also be nice to people in general, or else you are going to get punched in the face. I think that's really, that's it. John, you want to close us out here?
Yeah, just be nice to people. If you have questions about, you know, things that you see with people who may have disabilities, do some research, or, you know, politely ask, like, what can I do to learn more? That's all you got to do. But thanks for tuning in. Next time we're going to bring in the ghost of Osama bin Laden for an interview, and it's going to be weird.
Yeah, we don't speak his language. We're not sure how that's going to work yet.
Yeah, he was just like resurrect. He's not even speaking like Arabic or anything. He's just speaking like Farsi for no reason.
No, he speaks perfect English. Like,
yeah,
he lives
in Minnesota.
Jesus. All right, y'all. Thank you very much. On our honor, we will do our best.
To smash capitalism.
See you next time.